This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Texas is paying the price, but the rest of us, we are learning something about the oil market in this economy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today, the 17th day of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We talked yesterday for a bit about the vagaries of the Texas energy market, which, along with the cold and the snow and the ice, has left millions of people, three at least, more than that probably, that's in millions, of course, without power. And the thing is that even after the weather starts improving, eventually, the effects of this now three-day-long crisis are likely to linger and to be felt far beyond the Lone Star State. That's partly because of how the oil market works, or in some cases, doesn't. Marketplace's Justin Ho gets us going.
When the oil supply chain functions as it should, oil gets pumped out of the ground, trucked or piped to a refinery, and transformed into products including gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel.
All of these are experiencing some type of disruption because of the weather.
That's Matt Smith, director of commodity research at Clipper Data, which tracks the oil supply chain. He says right now, oil just isn't getting pumped out of the ground. Refineries are shut down, and companies aren't exporting barrels out of the Gulf Coast.
We're seeing a number of these different ports, such as Houston, Corpus Christi, also being closed.
The Gulf Coast handles roughly half of the country's oil refining capacity. That means the effects of the extreme cold will ripple even further down the supply chain throughout the U.S., says Michael Weber, an energy professor at the University of Texas.
Jet fuel in Atlanta depends on a refinery in East Texas, which depends on oil production in West Texas.
When it comes to gasoline, the refineries have a certain amount stored up that trucks can deliver to retail gas stations for now. That's because earlier this month, gasoline supplies were at relatively normal levels. But energy professor Tom Tsang at the University of Tulsa says if they're not replenished,
the question becomes, okay, how long are these refineries going to be shut down? And how many days of supply does this actually represent?
In the meantime, prices of oil and gas futures have started rising. Tsang says that means all of us could soon start paying more, too.
I would expect that certainly electric bills and natural gas bills are going to see spikes.
Tsang says that might be further down the line for the rest of the country, but it's already affecting the millions of Texans needing heating oil now. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
We got a snapshot of the consumer side of this economy today. Good job, everybody. Retail sales took a big jump last month, up more than 5% from December after a mostly grim fall season 2020. And if you're thinking, yes, Kai, of course sales went up. Do you even follow the news? Well, fair point. Camilla Yanishevsky's a retail analyst at CFRA.
We think that there are going to be a lot of hiccups for 2021 as a whole. And what really drove this sizable gain in January was the distribution of the $600 stimulus checks.
So, yes, those relief checks did make their way out into the economy, but there is kind of a lot going on here. First of all, are consumers going to be able to keep it up? The Biden administration is betting its $1.9 trillion relief plan on exactly that.
It might not be as fast or to the amount that Democrats would like. And as soon as that uncertainty is created, then there's a pullback in retail spending, which is why we saw 3 months of contraction, October, November, and December.
And then, just to make a little bit of a turn here, what does all of this mean for the whole economy? Because retail's doing fine. Gross domestic product is going to be back on track by summer. The Congressional Budget Office told us that last week. But what about the labor market? Jobs, the 10 million of them that we are still missing.
The retail recovery and the labor market recovery tell completely different stories. And the reason why they tell completely different stories is because for retail, we've seen a steroid of stimulus.
And just to wrap up the macroeconomic segment of the program today, we will give a nod to inflation, about which some are beginning to get worried. Among that number, though, are not, first of all, Treasury Secretary and former Fed Chair Janet Yellen, but also the current members of the Fed. The minutes of their most recent meeting came out today. Nary a peep about sustained price increases. Lots of increasing prices on Wall Street today, of course, couple record highs. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Tomorrow's going to be a big day on Capitol Hill virtually, of course. The CEOs of Robinhood, Reddit, Citadel, and Melvin Capital are all set to testify over the whole GameStop drama. To refresh, in case you've blocked it, big hedge funds were, as you might remember, betting against GameStop. A small army of Reddit day traders fought them, causing wild swings in the company's share price. And one topic sure to be coming up tomorrow is that phenomenon, short selling. Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who chairs the House Committee of Jurisdiction tomorrow, Financial Services, says predatory short selling must be stopped. We asked Marketplace's Sabri Benishour to explain how shorting got such a bad rap.
In 2004, Rick Smith's company, then called Taser International, they made tasers, was doing well.
We were growing at about a 200% clip.
And then, he says, a group of investors took out a $1 billion bet that the company's stock would fall. There was, after all, controversy at the time about the safety of tasers.
Then a whole bunch of awful things happened in rapid succession. Pretty clearly a well-coordinated attack that included legal campaigns, press campaigns.
He says the investors betting against his company were spreading rumors and launching PR campaigns against tasers, their safety, their sales, and all of that negative attention hurt.
2005 was a miserable year. We were fighting for our survival. We had been just completely slandered in the media. Our sales dropped significantly.
Their stock fell too, just as short sellers had hoped.
We saw our stock dive by almost 75%.
Shareholders lost $1 billion in value. The short sellers who bet against his company made hundreds of millions. The SEC launched an investigation and dropped it. The company survived. But stories like this are why short sellers have a bad rap.
There are many colorful notes that I get. I had one today that said I should be taken out and hanged.
Dan David is a short seller. That is his business. He's founder of Wolfpack Research. He looks for companies that are promising too much, lying, or defrauding people, and he bets against them.
And short activists have helped uncover some of the biggest frauds in history. You know, Enron to Tyco.
David says having optimists and pessimists makes markets more fair.
I didn't come to, being a short activist naturally. I fell into it after, discovering how many times I'd been lied to by investment banks.
But David does distinguish between himself and some short activist hedge funds. He is public about his short positions. Others aren't and don't have to be. Jim Angel is a finance professor at Georgetown. He says short sellers serve a purpose.
And to a certain extent, the short sellers are the bearers of bad news. And a lot of times people want to shoot the messenger.
But he says it would be great if we always knew who the messenger was. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Might I recommend to start your business and economic day, David Brancaccio and the gang on the Marketplace Morning Report. They'll tell you what you need to know. Well, let's see. What's new on television this year? How about animation? Some animation. And then some more animation. The big streaming platforms are going hard on new and old cartoons because, as Marketplace's Jasmine Garz reports, it might be the perfect pandemic business strategy.
Animated TV has always been cheaper to make than shows with live actors. But these days, it avoids a lot of problems for Hollywood, says Jason Squire, editor of the Movie Business Book.
It's much safer during COVID to do an animated movie because all the technicians are working from home, isolated.
Shaggy, is that you over there?
That's Velma from Scooby-Doo, soon making a comeback on HBO Max, voiced by Mindy Kaling. And animation is perfect for building libraries of content, which is why Disney Plus snapped up an old favorite. The Simpsons. And have you ever noticed how Bart's hair never goes out of style? Tim Hanlon is a media analyst with the Verter Group.
In the realm of television production, I mean, animation is kind of the most evergreen content that there is. It never really dates itself visually.
In 1989, when The Simpsons debuted, the model of a successful cartoon for adults was The Flintstones. Both shows attracted generations of grown-up fans who see cartoons as not just for kids. Ross Bennis is an entertainment analyst with eMarketer.
Now with these streaming services, there are as many cartoons aimed at adults as there are ones aimed at children.
And there's about to be a lot more. HBO Max has reportedly spent around $500 million on new adult animated projects. So if you're worried about running out of shows to watch during the pandemic, don't have a cow. There's plenty of new and old animated stuff coming your way. I'm Jasmine Garz for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Oh, we found a gold mine.
Any coffee called a gold mine has got to be good, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 90 today, 90.2%, 31,613. The NASDAQ went the other way, down 82 points, about a half percent, 13,965. S&P 500 basically flat, 39.31. That's two in a row for unchanged on the S&P. Household debt increased more than $14.5 trillion by the end of last year. That is according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. The borrowing was largely driven by mortgages, with people taking advantage of low interest rates to refi and buy homes. So, maybe a look at some lenders. Bank of America toted up 0.4%. JPMorgan Chase lifted 0.3% today. We check in on gas prices periodically, and with the oil and gas producing parts of this country in a deep freeze, maybe a look at where things stand. AAA says the cost of regular gas at the pump averaging $2.53 a gallon nationwide today. That is a dime higher than the average a year ago. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Last year, around this time, yes, I know, perfect timing, we launched a series called The United States of Work to help all of us get a better understanding of the jobs in this economy and who is doing them. We found 10 actual people across income levels and education and background in different occupational categories, and we asked them how the economy was working for them. The first person we introduced you to was a certified public accountant in New York City named Michael Durant.
Hey!
How are you? What's going on? It's good to see you.
And then eventually, his younger brother, AJ.
I zone him out after a while.
That's what teenagers do.
That is what teenagers do.
AJ is still in high school, 16 years younger than Michael, on his way to college, in part because Michael never thought that he was going to go.
I guess I have a different history than Michael because I have a bunch of people like telling me go to college. They're here to support me.
That's from an interview we did back in the before times. And in the years since, lots has changed, obviously, for this economy and for Michael and AJ as well. The biggest one being that their mom has died of COVID. So the other day, we reconnected on a Zoom. Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, and yourself?
I'm good. I'm good. AJ, how are you, man?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm all right. What's with the beard, yo? It's only been a year and you got a whole face full of hair here.
I gave up on trying to cut it, so.
Fair enough. Let me just ask, first of all, how this setup is happening in your place, because you're in the same apartment, but clearly different rooms, right, Michael?
Yes. He's in the the living room, and I'm in what is the kitchen slash now my office.
is this basically, AJ, how you two spend your days now, in the same apartment but different rooms?
Yes. It's weird because I've never actually like spent most of my day in the apartment with him. So
yeah, I bet. And you're trying to go to school remotely, right?
Yes.
What's it like spending your senior year going to school this way?
It's heartbreaking, but like I'm used to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I assume like you hang with your friends virtually somehow, right? You're texting or you're doing whatever. How do you like see people, if you know what I mean?
My friends and I are a little bit different. Usually if we was to meet in real life, it would be to get a sandwich or something from the store. Over person, we'd usually be on something like video call or playing video games together while on a call.
Yeah. Yeah. When was the last time you saw somebody in real life?
A few weeks.
Yeah.
Around like 4 to 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Michael, this is a totally subjective question, but we've known each other, you know, superficially anyway, for a while. Are you sad a little bit for AJ being now 17 and having this kind of life?
Oh, yes. Yes. I had an amazing senior year. I worked. I had a really good job and I saved up and I was able to really enjoy myself. And for him not to have that, I mean, just as simple as the graduation is a big part. We're hoping that in a year or so, we can take a big trip overseas somewhere as a celebration for him. We're thinking, I think AJ had mentioned like the Italy, he likes the Greek and Rome and gods and stuff like that. So maybe like a big history trip for us. We're looking at 2022, which is also the year I graduate. So it'll kind of be a two for one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the other part of this, right? You're in law school, you're working full time and Michael's got big, AJ's got big changes coming. So AJ, last question to you, and then I'll let you guys get back to however you're going to spend your afternoon. I guess, first of all, thank you for doing this, because
no problem. If somebody called, it's my pleasure.
If somebody called my 17-year-old and said, "Hey, let's put you on the radio," he would say, "Forget it." But what's important to you that people know about what's happening now to people your age? I mean, you're a thoughtful kid, and I'm sure you've thought this through.
My answer to that is a simple answer, but very complicated in its response, per se. My passion, or at least one of them, is teenage mental health. And as someone who's struggled with that in the past, it's very important to me because to have a weak mental health for a teenager is very detrimental in this day and age, especially with this COVID situation, because at least before, you would see people every day, and if you had friends, you'd be able to communicate with them. But now it's a completely different ballgame in which communication is a lot different. It's very easy to just stay in your room all day and not let anybody know what's happening to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely true. Well, look, you two, thanks very much. I appreciate your time. AJ Williams, Michael Durant. We'll talk to you soon. Best of luck. And I hope the rest of the semester goes all right for both you guys.
Thank you, Kai.
Thank you.
Be good. Take care. The premise of this project, as I said, is 10 people as a proxy for the labor force as it is. In a way, in AJ, we found a proxy for the labor force as it will be, a whole generation of workers coming of age during a pandemic. The mountains in central Puerto Rico have mild temperatures, a nice mix of sun, and shade, almost perfect for farming, coffee especially, except for the hurricanes. In 2017, Irma and Maria destroyed 80% of the island's coffee crop, and the recovery has been slow. It takes 3 to 5 years for coffee plants to start producing beans, which is right about now. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab visited a farmer who's had to start over from scratch.
I'm in a car winding through the mountains of Adjuntas, a region on the west side of Puerto Rico. The road is one lane on the edge of a cliff with no guardrail. After 30 terrifying minutes, I finally reached Sandra Farms.
Hola.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Well, no, thank you for finding your way here in this wonderful highway.
It was quite a drive.
That's Israel Gonzalez. He and his wife, Sandra, bought the farm about 25 years ago. He's a third-generation coffee farmer, and keeping the family tradition alive has been hard.
So we have only gone through about 3 or 4 hurricanes. That's all. So.
Gonzalez does this a lot, laughs when he talks about something tough. There was Hurricane George in 1998, which wiped out thousands of coffee plants and their house.
Then, of course, in 2017, Irma Maria and even Isaias last year caused some damage up here. So
Maria was the worst. It destroyed almost all of Gonzalez's crops.
Some of them are still dying 3 years later. So the bleeding continues.
But for all its destruction, Maria also left Gonzalez, who's 80, a way to rebuild his business.
I think what happened was 200-mile-an-hour winds here chopped off the canopy in the forest. So that allowed the trees to get a little sun. So then we found them. Oh, we found a gold mine.
That gold mine is Tipica, a bean in the Arabica family.
The coffee of popes and kings, they used to call it in the 1800s.
Maybe you've heard of Kona from Hawaii or Jamaica Blue Mountain. Those are Tipica beans. Gonzalez says his coffee, called Forgotten Forest, that's the working title, will sell for $60 a pound. Expensive to drink because it's expensive to grow. Tipica trees are more susceptible to disease. They don't produce a lot of fruit. It has to be picked by hand. And it's hard to find workers willing to make the mountain drive. Gonzalez's farm is barely turning a profit, so he's come up with a way to raise capital, crowdsourcing from coffee snobs.
If you invest $13 per tree, we will grow that seedling to the third year when it begins to produce coffee. All of the coffee that we produce from those trees belongs to those who participate in the project. Now, from the fourth year on, we got you, though. You got to buy from us.
Gonzalez says so far he sold more than 250 shares of Forgotten Forest, still well short of what he needs, but he has a couple years until harvest. In the meantime, he'll rely on the Bourbon coffee he's harvesting now. He makes us some using the pour-over method, which is done by hand.
Use good water. The temperature should be between 196 and 207. Not boiling water, please.
Gonzalez slowly pours hot water over the grounds, and they puff up.
This coffee does that because the beans are fresh. They call it a mushroom or bloom because the gases must escape.
I nod and smile and don't tell him I grew up with a Mr. Coffee and Folgers.
Cheers?
Oh, yes, chin-chin. Yes.
It's strong, but has a chocolatey sweetness. Gonzalez says Tipica will be even better.
Barring any hurricane, so always hurricane. So, but you can't, if you fear the hurricanes, then you don't do anything, so you move on.
And if a hurricane does come, you just hope it leaves behind some magic beans. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, maybe you saw the video. What used to be the Trump Plaza Casino building in Atlantic City, New Jersey, is no more. It was brought down in a controlled explosion this morning. We'd mentioned in this space a month or two ago that the mayor of Atlantic City was auctioning off the rights to push the button to set off the explosion. Well, Carl Icahn, who owns the building now, having apparently bought it out of bankruptcy a couple of years ago, Mr. Icahn put the kibosh on that. He did, though, donate the $175,000 that was equivalent to the top bid to the Boys and Girls Club of Atlantic City. All right, we're going, but here's your midweek moment of economic context. A quick glimpse behind the curtain of this morning's retail sales numbers. Spending at bars and restaurants was up almost 7% last month over December. Makes sense, right? Loosening virus restrictions. Net-net, though, sales at restaurants and bars are down 16.5% this January compared to last. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Robin Edgar, Drew Jostad, Garrett Lang, Jeff Peters, Jay Siebold, Charlton Thorpe, Ben Talladay, and Becca Weinman. Once again, they're the ones coming into the studios, so most of the rest of us don't have to. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is 8 p.m.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.